I think that we could all, I think we would all agree that if there is any moment in history that showed that Hashem was the creator of the world, and that Hashem is in power, and that nature bends to Hashem's will, it was probably Kriyas Yamsuf. Kriyas Yamsuf is the greatest moment in the history of Hashem's power in the world. If you look in the Yalkut Ma'am Lo'ez, the Ma'am Lo'ez is this amazing collection of medrash by Rav Yaakov Kuli, who was one of the great Sfardi Gedolim in the last few hundred years. So he lists 50 miracles that occurred at Kriyas Yamsuf, 50 different things that happened to show the power of Hashem. You know, besides the parting of the seas, we all have seen either enough, you know, cartoons or seen enough comic books that talk about, you know, the 12 individual paths of the Shvatim. You know, the floor of the sea became perfectly dry. The salt water of the sea gave them sweet drinking water. There was fruits and there was treats for the children inside the glass-like walls of Kriyas Yamsuf. And the illogical pursuit of Mitzrayim running into the water, even though they made absolutely no sense and they were essentially committing suicide, the individual punishments that the Medrash talks about, each Mitzri, each Egyptian who ran into the water got exactly the punishment they deserved based on how they each individual treated a Jew in Mitzrayim. And on top of this, Paro survives the entire ordeal, maybe. The Jewish people were not punished for complaining. Even as they were walking, some Jews, as the Medrash, were complaining while they were walking through Kriyas Yamsuf, that like the miracle wasn't good enough for them, that it wasn't impressive enough for them. And the Avos, all of Bnei Yaakov, were brought back to life, says the Medrash. There was Tchias HaMesim to witness the event. Bnei Yisrael attained this magnificent level of Nevuah. It's clear that HaKadosh Baruch Hu pulled all of the stops. Hashem held nothing back when it came to the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf, to show his mastery of the world, his dominance, that is truly the Borei Olam. Yet, there are very few phenomena in the teachings of Chazal that we equate to what could be on the level of Kriyas Yamsuf. What in our life could possibly be compared to the splitting of the sea? In addition, whenever we do find a comparison in Chazal that this is as great or this is as like Kriyas Yamsuf, it seems to call into question, seems to limit the nature of Kriyas Yamsuf. Now, there are three times in Shas where the Gemara says this is like Kriyas Yamsuf. Perhaps you all definitely know one of them. Maybe you know the second one, and probably nobody knows the third one. Let's go in reverse order. The one that nobody knows is the Gemara in the end of Pesachim that says that if a person has stomach issues, relieving those stomach issues is as difficult as splitting the sea. That's number one. That's the one you don't hear at the Shabbat Brachas. Number two is making a parnasa. The Gemara says in Maseches Pesachim as well that a person be able to have the money he needs to support himself, able to support his family in order to build and have what he wants in order to live a proper life, to make a parnasa, is as difficult as splitting the sea. And the third one that you all know from the first daf in Maseches Sota is that kasha zivugin, the difficulty of making a zivug, of making, finding one's besher, to finding a spouse, is as difficult as splitting the sea. Now, what's the simple explanation of all of these things? Is that just as it was as difficult for Hashem to split the sea, so too it's difficult, it requires effort to make a parnasa, going through shidduchim, finding a spouse. All these things can be challenging and be difficult. Others like to say the Jewish people, according to all of the Rishonim, they didn't actually go to the other side of Yamsuf, right? That's when you watch the Ten Commandments or you watch, you know, the King of Egypt. So they go on one side, they come out the other side. But that's not what happened. Tosos, the Rambam, Sforno, everybody writes that Bnei Yisrael actually went in a semicircle. If this is the Yamsuf over here, they walked in like this and they made a turnaround in the sea and they came back out on the other same side, just further down by the Yamsuf. That's what most Rishonim say. And we know that each tribe had their own path, right? So what does that mean? If you're on the path over here, and you're on the path over here, who had to travel further? The people on the outside. They had to make a larger semicircle over here. But if you were on the inside of the path to come out over here, you only had to make a small traveling in order to get to the other side. So some of the Darshanim say, at the end of the day, everybody gets where they need to go, But some people have longer paths. Some people have to go on the outside of the semicircle, and some people have to go on the inside. It's a shorter path. But eventually, people will get where they need to go. And that's what it means that the splitting of the sea, shidduchim, parnasa, whatever it is, you know, relieving your stomach issues, whatever it is, all these things are kriyas yamsuf. The obvious question for any believing Jew, and this is what we want to talk about today, is that any believing Jew should be shaken by the fact that Chazal say that something is difficult for a Kadosh Baruch Hu. If splitting the sea was done by Hashem, and the Gemara is saying that finding a shidduch or making a parnasa is as difficult as splitting the sea, well then, mathematically, you would be forced to say that it's kush, it's difficult for Hashem to split the sea. But that's preposterous. That's crazy. There's nothing difficult for Hashem. Hashem is literally the master of the world. He made the world. Nothing is hard for Hashem. Hashem, at the end of Kriyas Yamsuf, I promise you, did not have to go on vacation, because that was a very difficult day, and the splitting of the sea and all the miracles. Ooh, Hashem was wiped. He needs to take time off. That pretty much did not happen. So what does it mean that something was difficult for a Kadosh Baruch Hu? So in order to come to what I think is a good answer, I want to go to a totally different sugya, totally different topic, based on an idea I heard from another Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael, and I want to use that message, I want to apply it over here. The Gemara in Yevamos tells us that Rabbi Akiva was 40 years old when he started to learn. Rachel, his wife, decided to marry him, even though Rabbi Akiva was in Mamish and Am Ha'aretz, did not even know Aleph Beis, didn't know anything. And yet, the daughter of the biggest Gvir, whoever you think, is considered a very chashuv, wealthy person in the Jewish world. Imagine that person, but 100 times more, and that person's daughter. And that person's daughter decided they wanted to marry the ignorant Am Ha'aretz shepherd, Akiva, for whatever reason. What was the reason? She saw inside Rabbi Akiva the potential for something great. Even though it was not there yet, she saw the potential for something great inside Rabbi Akiva. She sent him to Cheder to learn Aleph Beis, and he needed a lot of chizuk. Eventually, as we know, he would receive that famous chizuk from the dripping of the water onto the rock, making those penetrating marks over and over again. If you keep at it, you stick to it. Over time, small actions make a big difference. And Akiva goes to learn in yeshiva for 12 years. He tells his wife, and his wife sends him off, I'll see you much later. For 12 years, I'm going to go learn how to learn Torah, psukim, gemara, halacha, and hopefully become and make something of myself. So the Gemara in the Darim picks up the rest of the story. The Gemara says that after 12 years, now Akiva is now Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva has now 12,000 students. He's become an accomplished teacher and a great Rosh Yeshiva, big Talmid Chacham. And he decides, after 12 years, it's time to come home. As he's walking from his yeshiva back to his house, he's about to approach his home, and he hears someone talking to his wife, Rachel. And the person asks Rachel, how come you allow your husband to stay there? He hasn't been you for 12 years. You're like a living widow. Where's your husband? How come he doesn't come to see you? So Rachel takes a step back, and she says to the very rude questioner, if I would have heard, and if Rabbi Akiva could hear my voice right now, that I knew that he was coming, I would tell him, don't even come home, go back to yeshiva for another 12 years, and learn Torah, so he could become an even bigger Talmid Chacham. That's what I want. So Rabbi Akiva hears this at the door, literally as he's about to knock on the door, he hears this, he says, oh, 12 more years. Turns around, doesn't even say hello, and he goes back to yeshiva to learn for another 12 years. So all of the Mefarshim and the Gemara ask the same question. A Shalom Aleichem, a cup of coffee, maybe a piece of cake, say hello, and then turn back and go. You couldn't say hello for a little bit of time, see your wife for a little bit and go back to yeshiva? Would that have ruined the entire endeavor if Rabbi Akiva would have said hello to his wife? So there are popular answers. There's a famous answer from Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz famously says that 12 plus 12 does not equal 24. 12 years of learning with a break and another 12 years of learning is not the same intensity, not the same focus as 24 years straight, right? You can learn for 5 minutes, or you can learn and take a break for another 5 minutes, or you can learn 10 minutes straight. The quantitative and the qualitative difference, the qualitative difference of learning for 10 minutes straight is different than learning for 5 and 5. It's a much more focused, intense learning that does better for the person's neshama. I don't want to say Rav Chaim Shmulevitz's answer today. I heard once a beautiful idea from Rav Menashe Reisman. Rav Menashe Reisman is a very popular Yiddish-speaking Magid Shir. He's a Belzer Chassid who lives in Eretz Yisrael. So he says the following vort that he heard from, I think, a Mora in a classroom, either his daughter, his niece, she gave the following shot. And he said that when Rabbi Akiva left his house 12 years before, he had a closed heart. His heart was not open to learning. He had a lot of challenges before him. What do you think the davening was like of his wife Rachel? What do you think Rachel's tefillos were like when her husband was in yeshiva? Do you think she, you know, went through Shemona Esrei very quickly? Or do you think she poured out her heart and finished Tehillim every single day that her husband should become a Talmid Chacham? She was sacrificing her marriage. She was sacrificing her whole life. She gave up the life and the luxury of her father's house. She put every fiber of her being into those davenings. Of course she did. Everything was on the line. How could she not daven for the success of her husband? Can you imagine how annoyed she would be? He went for 12 years and came back, he knew Aleph Beis, and that was it? That's crazy. Of course she davened, and she pushed, and she begged on Shari Shemayim that her husband should become something, and should become something special. She knew how much help her husband needed. He didn't know Aleph Beis. He couldn't identify, you know, a Rashi Aleph from a Rashi Ches. He was confused. He didn't know the difference between the two. It was a challenge. And she poured everything into that davening. This is why Rabbi Akiva could say at the end of this episode, Shaliva Shalchem Shalahi. Everything I have and everything my students have is because of Rachel. Well, because Rachel let him go away to yeshiva for 24 years? No. Because the davening of Rachel, his wife, led to every success and every student and every gemara and every chiddush and every halacha that Rabbi Akiva would teach. Now, did Rachel know during those 12 years if her husband was successful? She had no idea. She hoped and she prayed that what was happening was good, and he was growing and becoming a bentor and hopefully a Talmid Chacham. But there was no letters, there was no phone calls, and there was no text to know exactly what was going on. After 3 or 4 years, when things started to click for him, did Rabbi Akiva tell his wife, oh, you don't have to daven for me, I'm good? Of course not. She had no idea. Meaning, on day one, when Rabbi Akiva left and Rachel was by herself, she was pouring her heart out. Amazing tefillah. She was mamash connecting to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And what about on the last day of year 12? What were her tefillahs like? They were the same. Why? Because she had no idea that anything had changed. She assumed that all of her tefillahs were still needed to push and to prod and to pour out to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And if she would have gotten a letter from Rabbi Akiva saying that I now know how to learn Gemara, I wrote a kuntres, I'm writing a sefer, she would have thanked Hashem. But tell me, what would have happened to those tefillahs? What do you think? Tell me, what do you think would have happened to those tefillahs? Why? Because it's working out. Hashem took care of it, we're good. I'm done. I don't have to daven anymore. Everything's fine. She was davening for a miracle that her husband, who was an Am Haaretz, would become a Talmid Chacham. Every single day was davening for a miracle. So now tell me, why didn't Rabbi Akiva knock on the door and say Shalom Aleichem to Rachel when he came home? Because he knew that if she would have seen what he had become, and now that he was a Magid Shir and a Talmid Chacham, all of those tefillos that were pushing and begging and connecting to Hashem, they all would have stopped. And Rabbi Akiva knew this. So once he heard and he got permission that she was okay with him going back to learn, and she was prepared to be Moser Nefesh, he turned around and he went back to yeshiva. And he grew even more on the wings of the davening of his wife Rachel, and it was those tefillos that created 24,000 Talmidim. That's what Rabbi Akiva meant. It was her davening, her Mesiras Nefesh of tefillah, that led to all of those things. When a child comes home from school in the beginning of the year, and he gets 100 on the first test, and he gets 100 on the second test, and he gets 100 on the third test, it can do something to our tefillos. It weakens them. Because the parent who's davening for the child, who's getting 60s all the time, is not the same parent of the child who's getting hundreds all the time. Because the parents of the child who's getting hundreds all the time doesn't have that intensity in their davening. The kid's good, he takes care of himself, practically packs his own lunch, gets on the bus himself, is geschickt together, does everything they're supposed to do. It's fine, he doesn't need me. It's the child who's struggling That's where the parents are davening and saying the Tehillim and going for brachos. That's where the most intense davening is. That's where the greatest avodas Hashem is, when things are challenging and things are difficult. Because after weeks of perfection, we begin to forget Hashem. We say, Hashem, Hashem, we're good. My son's got it, my daughter's got it, she takes care of it, we don't need any help, we're fine, everything is going to be just okay. The real work, though, begins after we see the success and the hatzlacha. And we have to train ourselves to not let go of those early emotions when we were clinging to Hashem. I am going to assume that everybody in this room has had challenging periods in their life. If not, please tell me. I'd like to know how things are going. But I'd imagine we all had challenging periods. What's the davening like when you want something more than anything in the world and you feel like you can't have it? Those are the best Shmona Esrays. Those are the best philos. You're on high. You're soaring. You feel that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is right there with you, and you're having a real intimate conversation with Hashem. There's a kesher between you and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And what happens after that challenge is good, and you got into the program that you wanted, and you got the thing that you needed, and this issue with this family member is alleviated, what are those feels like? Reshvach. They go back to the way they were. The sea has gone back to the way it is, and everything is calm, and the davening and the Shmoneh Esrays, they're not the same. They're not the way they were when things were difficult, and you really needed to connect to Hashem. I want to learn with you the Medrash that you have in front of you. Look at the Medrash in Shmos Rabbi Chaf Aleph. Ba'os Yisha hayu omdim v'lo hayu yodim ma la'asos. At that time they were standing, and they mamish had no idea what to do. V'hayam soger. The sea was closed. V'hasone rodef v'chayos min ha'midbar. Their enemies were coming. There were wild animals in the desert. Shne'amar sagar aleim ha'midbar. The desert closed in around them. Kevin shiro Yisrael shayu mokafin b'gimel ruchos. They saw they were surrounded on three sides. Hayam soger, v'hasone rodef, v'achayos min hamidbar. The sea and the enemies and the animals all around them. Talu einayim la'avim shvashemayim v'tzaku l'kadosh baruch hu. They saw there was literally nowhere else to turn. And they looked up the heavens and they screamed out to Hashem. Shne'amar v'yisaku b'nei Yisrael el Hashem. V'lama asa kadosh baruch hu l'hamkach. Why is it that Hashem made it that all of this had to happen? Elishaya Kadosh Baruch Hu misavel tefilah son. Because in some way, whatever this means, on our way of understanding, Hashem desired their tefilos. Hashem was interested in their davening. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, lama hadavar doma, what is it like? Lamelech shayaba b'derech, like a king who's coming on the way. Vaisabas malachim soekes lo, b'vakasha mimcha sileni miyad halistim. And the princess is crying out, please, please help me. Someone is attacking me. Shamaha melech metzila. The king saves her, and he comes to the rescue. La'achra yamim b'kesh lisa osa'isha. Afterwards, the husband, the king, says, oh, save this lady. We're very nice. We have a nice relationship. Let's get married. Hayim misaveh shetadaber imo v'lo haisarotza. He's trying to court her. He's trying to get her to go out. Nothing's working. He doesn't want to talk. She doesn't want to talk to him. Masa Melech, what does the king do? Gira baha listim kadesh shetitzok v'yishma Melech. So he sets up a thing where the robbers come back, and she has to cry out again in order to create that relationship. Now, that is not a healthy way that you should try to find someone your shidduch. That's not. We're not recommending that. It's a mashal. But ba'osu sha amar kadosh baruch lekach ha'yisim mevakesh l'shma kolchem. So Hashem says, why did we arrange this whole thing? Because Hashem wanted their davening. He wanted Bnei Israel to daven in a sincere, real way, at the point where they understand that there is nobody else besides Hashem, and nobody else can help them. Why did Hashem set up the drama that was to unfold at Yom Suf? Because Hashem wanted a kesher with Am Yisrael. But often, the only time we feel that we can have a kesher Hashem is Be'ez Tzara, when things are not good. In a time of need. So Hashem created a time of need. He created a scenario where Bnei Yisrael would have to feel that there's only a Kadosh Baruch Hu to cry out and daven. So when a person is in Shidduchim, and there's nothing more than that person wants to be married, then the tefillos and the kesher with the Kadosh Baruch Hu is stronger than ever. Davening all the time, doing everything you can to connect. And when a person needs more parnasa, and they don't have enough money to send the kids to camp, and they don't have enough money to make sure they have to be able to afford a simcha, that davening is huge. It's a major davening. It's on fire because they need the brach of Hashem. that bracha of Barech Aleinu is longer and it's more intense than anything. And it's in those moments that a person feels closest to Hashem, because they need Hashem the most. They feel like they need Hashem the most in those cases. But after the success and the triumph comes some changes. When the chuppah is over and the l'chaims have died down and the money's in the bank, what happens to the tefillos? It's not the same. And when the refuah has come and everybody is healthy, are we still saying tehillim? Are we still schlepping out those Shemoneh Esreis? It's not the same. We don't feel that we need Hashem like we did when we were standing on a jagged rock looking into the waters in front of us. We're thankful and we're happy that Hashem did it for us, but it's not the same. It's not the same level. And Hashem knows that we're not as connected as we were before. And this is why all of those things are kasha kekriya samsuf. The parnasa, the refuah, and the shidduchim. They're all compared to kriya samsuf. Because Hashem knows that we need parnasa, and that we need health, and that we need a partner. And He wants His children to have what's best for them. Of course Hashem wants you to have what's going to be best for you. And He knows, at the same time, that when He gives you what you want and what you need, there's going to be a weaker sense of desire. Thanks, Dad. We're good. I have the credit card. I have a car. I'll talk to you next week. And that's it. And that's how we act. And we'll move away from Hashem. And we'll neglect the intensity of our avodas Hashem. The shidduchim, the parnasa, and the refuah is kasha for Hashem. It's difficult to split the sea kavayachal. Why? Because Hashem, in some respect, again, this is all on a derech of drash, this is not literally by a Kaddish Baruch Hu, but what it means is, it's kasha. Because Hashem says, I know that the person needs a shidduch, a parnasa, and refuah. But when I give it to them, they're not going to talk to me anymore. They're not going to be interested. They're not going to want a relationship, because they're going to be on their own. So Hashem stands there and says, ah, if I give it to them, they need it and they want it. But if I don't give it to them, they're going to want to have a kesher. They're going to become closer. They want to grow. They want to do more mitzvahs. They want to daven more. They're going to want to be better people, because they're going to want me to give them something. And therefore, that's kasha. Not that it's physically difficult for Hashem, but in some respect, on some level that we can't understand, it's emotionally difficult for Hashem, because Hashem doesn't want us to go away. The language of kasha is also the language of Rashi, the end of Parshas Pinchas. Why is it that we observe one more day of Sukkot? Why do you have Shmini Aseres and Simchas Torah? Rashi says why? Kasha alai predastan. It is difficult for me, says Hashem, for you to leave after 7 days of Sukkot. We spent an amazing time together, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. Says Hashem, I want one more day. And that's Shmini Aseres. What does it mean, kasha alai predastan? It's hard for Hashem for us to go, but He can't open the door. He can't find the car keys. What does that mean? It means Hashem is saying, I want you guys here. You guys were connected. You were davening. You were doing everything you were supposed to do. You were running on all cylinders. And if I give you what you need, you're not going to talk anymore. You're not going to grow. You're not going to daven. You're not going to learn. That's kasha kriyas yamsuf by parnasa, refuah, and by shidduchim. Now, I'm not sure if this understanding of kasha kriyas yamsuf necessarily gives consolation to people who are struggling in those areas. But it can give us a different perspective regarding our relationship with Hashem during these times. Of course, you have the right to be frustrated when we want something very badly from Hashem and we don't have these things in our lives. And every person has the right to ask for the basic needs to function as a human being and as a Jew. But is it better to be upset at Hashem than to turn your back on Him? Is that the better alternative? We are better off building a relationship with Hashem instead of not having Hashem in our lives. The term zivug doesn't only mean making shidduchim. It refers to marriage in general. Everyone knows that just because a person made a living yesterday, there's no guarantee you're going to make a living tomorrow. Just because there's money in the bank today, who says it's not going to get wiped out? The wealthiest guy in India just lost $100 billion this week because he did some shady business. Now he's only down to like $20 billion, whatever it is. But who knows? A guy lost $100 billion in like 2 weeks. It's a lot of money. Just because something is in the bank today doesn't mean it's going to be there tomorrow. Making a living is something that a person has to engage in constantly. He always needs to come up with new creative ways to keep and to earn his livelihood. New avenues in business, new markets, creativity. Even if a person has a salaried position or you get the same check every single month, He always needs to maintain his status, remain current, new trends, development, whatever your field or profession is. There can be no stagnation or coasting along when it comes to making a living. It has to be worked on a constant basis, day in and day out. You can't take a break in all of these things. And this is the connection between livelihood and marriage. It's the same idea. There could be no coasting in marriage. There's no taking a break and saying everything is good. Just as there could be no coasting in business. A business can go bankrupt after 30 years of success, and a marriage can also go bankrupt after 30 years if you're not constantly plugging in and doing something. Marriages and livelihood are both as difficult as Kriyas Yam Suf. They both require perpetual maintenance and davening and connection. Sometimes we find the following issue. We find this sometimes when people go through illnesses as well. I've heard this from Rabbanim who work in Camp Simcha and other places like that, that someone who goes through a cancer diagnosis, a difficulty, they will often come back and say that when they were diagnosed with cancer and throughout the treatments, their davening was intense, it was strong, they felt close to Hashem, but now that the person's in remission, everything is healthy, they don't feel close. They feel like their purpose of being is not the same as it was. They want to feel close, but the davening doesn't have that intense anymore. They don't want to get sick again, Rahman al-Hassan, but they treasured that feeling, that intense they had with Hashem. And Chas v'Shalom to ever judge a person for thinking that, you know, they wanted the way that it was before in that situation. That's not what we're saying. But it's the same midah, that a person can go through those episodes and long for that relationship. I saw Rabbi Pesach Kron, he writes in one of his Sfarim, that Rav Shach related about Gedolim of the previous generations, and he would tell stories. And someone asked Rav Chaim Soloveitchik how it was possible that a particular wealthy, charitable person in Minsk lost all their money. He had a lot of money, very successful, and he lost everything. So Rav Chaim answered the following way. He said, life is compared to university. Imagine that a father sends his son to university. He takes a difficult course, and he passes it with the highest marks. That's semester one. But in the next semester, he has to start a new course, despite the success of the previous semester. Just because you got an A in semester one doesn't mean you're going to get an A in semester two. So applying this lesson to this gentleman from Minsk, Rav Chaim said, the wealthy man may have passed the course of being wealthy, the lesson of life of being wealthy, but now he has to take a new course, a new class in poverty. And Hashem tests to see how this person relates to him, even in this situation. Sometimes we pass the test of tefillah when things are difficult and challenging. But we also have to pass the test of tefillah when the challenge has been removed. That's also a different challenge. The message of Kashuk Kriyas Yam Suf is relevant after the struggle as well. After we daven and receive the appropriate income or spouse or refuah, it's not time to sit back. The Gemara is telling us something else about Yam Suf and marriage and parnasa. If we want to maintain what we have, you also have to have the splitting of the sea in mind all the time. That Hashem is always there. We always need Hashem. I think we all know the famous joke of the gentleman who's looking for a parking spot and he makes promises, Hashem, if I can find the parking spot, I'll learn Daf Yomi, and it's 5 minutes to the meeting. I'll do Daf Yomi, and I'll go to Minyan 3 times a day, and it's two minutes to the meeting, Daf Yomi 3 times a day, and I'm going to, you know, build a yeshiva for orphans in Eretz Yisrael. And then finally, the last minute, he finds a parking spot and says, "Ah, Hashem, I'm good. I'm fine. I take all the back. I found it myself. We're okay." But we do that all the time, and it's the same thing with Cheshbon HaNefesh, taking on Kabbalos, Avoda, pushing the envelope forward. We often feel I can only grow if there's a struggle, something to overcome. And I'll do it because I want this thing from Hashem. But what if there's nothing you want from Hashem right now? You also have to daven, you also have to push, and you also have to grow. And the message of Kashuk Kriyas Yam Suf is that Hashem is our Father in heaven, and He cares about us deeply more than anybody else, and He wants to be involved in our lives. But like any parent, if we drift away and we're not involved, then it's difficult for Him. As difficult as it was for Him to let us go and to split the sea. And it's our job to not let go. Okay? Good? Questions? No? Okay. We'll stop here.